Hey everyone, Jeremy and I are really glad to be here this morning with you. And actually, we've been talking about this for a little over a week now about doing a message together. And the more we talked about it, the more excited I got about it. And I'm really excited to do this with him as we've thought through the message here today. And I was sharing something with Jeremy that I want to share with you that I just recently heard about a psychologist that was speaking about the season that we're in and what it feels like when you get deferred, like finish lines, like you think that this is the end of it only to find out that you have to go farther in this. And obviously it fits the season of us being in quarantine together, alone together. But the analogy that was used was that of a race. And if you think about running, some of you are runners, some of you aren't. Jeremy and I actually were runners and he's still running. I gave that thing up, but there's different level racing. And so a 5K, you're going to run 3.1 miles and imagine jumping into a 3.1 mile race. And many have said it's one of the hardest races to run because you run so hard. It's short enough that you think you can almost run that thing like a sprint. And so it does something to your body, but at the end of that 3.1 race, as you're coming into what you think the finish line is, and you see it's not actually a finish line, but they say with a sign that standing out there, this is a 10K. And you are you kidding me? I thought I was running 3.1. Now I have to go 6.2. And so you run the 6.2 mile race only to come to the end of that and to see at the end of that that the sign says, just kidding, this is a 25K race. And you go, no way. And now you're running a 25K race. And then at the end of that finish line, it says, no, for real, this is a marathon. This is a 26.2 mile run.
Yeah, I know for me, when you first shared that analogy, it resonated really well for me because the beginning of the season did feel like one of those kind of shorter runs. I can remember one of the first 5Ks I'd ever run. I run it a number of times. It's actually in the place where I grew up in the large city of Overijssel, about 20 some minutes south of here. And I love that they've kind of embraced what they are in their 5K they run every year. It's called the Rural Rush. And one year, like there was the t-shirt had like a bunch of corn stalks running a race, but, I can remember when I ran that, I've run longer distance and I've run shorter distance, and I can resonate that the shorter ones, when I'm running a 5K, like it's, you can't sprint 3 miles, or like I can't sprint 3 miles, but I find myself kind of leaning in and pressing into it in a way that's a little bit different, that when you finish the thing, oh man, like when you finish the finish line, like you think the race is done, and then because of how hard you've pressed in that short distance, now a different challenge has begun, that now you're trying to keep what you ate for breakfast inside of you, right? It's a hard, taxing run. And yeah, in a lot of ways, the beginning of the season felt like that.
Yeah, and I know, Jeremy, that you've run multiple runs, different distances. So the 5Ks, I've run those too. My first race was actually a 10K that I ran, and I ran it with a guy that was faster than me and decided that I would stay with him. And I felt that same thing, like this revolt going on in my body. We ran, and for me, this is lightning speed, not for everybody, but we were under 8 minute miles for a 10K, and I about lost it when I went across that finish line. And both of us have run a marathon, and when I think about the marathon, the distance on that and the months of preparation that go into that and this mindset that says eventually I'm going to complete that. This is on my bucket list. I'm going to complete that thing. It takes a lot of preparation to get into that, and being in a season where we didn't have a lot of prep for this, and it just switches. Like you're going from 5 to 10 to 15 to going, we're in a marathon. I didn't sign up for this thing. I ran in a marathon and I ran a marathon, and those are different things. And I was thinking about the marathon that I stepped into. It was the Bayshore Marathon, and I just went to support my brother and my sister-in-law. And there was a moment as they were running up in Traverse City on the bay, that they were coming by, and it's a tough spot in the marathon. When you hit like that 18, 20 mile mark, it can be really hard at that point. And so I wanted to be there just to cheer them on. I had my running gear on. I was a runner at that point, and I just was going to run alongside them for a second. And when they came by, my sister-in-law Mary was running and my brother Todd was with her, and the wind was stiff against them. And Mary said, "Wind, wind," with it, the extra amount of air that she really didn't have in her lungs. She like pushed it out, "Wind." And Todd said to me, "Let's shoulder up." And so we did. We went shoulder to shoulder for a while and broke the wind for her to run in behind us. And I think about that, just leaning on each other to support another as we ran that together. And I think that's part of why I love doing ministry with, and I love partnering with. It's what made me really excited about this, because our friendship, Jeremy, and our partnership in the gospel, and that with our greater team, it's my favorite word is with. And to do this today with is, it's exciting for me. And I want to jump into the series that we're in. We're in a series that we're calling Now What? And it's in a, it's set in the desert. And so we've been on this desert journey, and you and I have been tag teaming the sermons every other week. Now we're tag teaming together here. But to think about the place called Rephidim that we were in last week, a place where God did this miracle, and Moses was asking the question, because the Israelites were grumbling against him, like, "Why are you grumbling against me? I'm thirsty, you're thirsty, I'm without water, you're without water. If I had the capacity to actually make water show up, we wouldn't be thirsty right now. Why are you complaining against me?" And God is our provider. And so Moses went to God with that. God instructed him in Rephidim to take a staff and to strike a rock, and the water came out of it. And they drank. Well, it's also in Rephidim that, as the story goes, they were actually attacked by a group of people called the Amalekites. And in that place, it's the story in the Bible that maybe you know of it, maybe you don't know of it, but it's a story in the Bible where Joshua went out with some of the warriors and went out to defend the nation of Israel that was under attack. And Moses stood, and people literally held Moses' arms up. When his arms were up, the people of Israel prevailed. When his arms dropped down, they began to lose ground. And eventually, they won the battle. And I love the imagery of that, that the arms of Moses up praying over the people on God's response to come to the aid of the Israelites. Well, it's there that we pick up the story. And the people of Israel have been known now for chapter 15, 16, and 17 as people that have grumbled, going this direction with their complaints, found an object. It's Moses. And Moses has gone vertical with it to pray to God. And the people are in a place where they have a lot of need. And I want to pick up our story there, because Moses' father-in-law shows up. And he's watching what's going on. And in chapter 18, beginning at verse 13, I want to read these words. "The next day, Moses took his seat to serve as judge for the people, and they stood around him from morning till evening. When his father-in-law saw all that Moses was doing for the people, he said, 'What is this you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone as judge while all the people stand around you from morning till evening?' Moses answered him, 'Because the people come to me to seek God's will. Whenever they have a dispute, it is brought to me, and I decide between the parties and inform them of God's decrees and his instructions.' Moses' father-in-law replied, 'What you are doing is not good. You and these people who come to you will only wear yourselves out. The work is too heavy for you. You cannot handle it alone. Listen now to me, and I will give you some advice, and may God be with you. You must be the people's representative before God and bring their dispute to him. Teach them his decrees and instructions, and show them in the way they are to live and how they are to behave. But select capable men from all the people, men who fear God, trustworthy men who hate dishonest gain, appoint them as officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. Have them serve as judges for all the people at all times, but have them bring every difficult case to you. The simple cases, they can decide themselves. That will make your load lighter because they will share it with you. And if you do this, and God, as God commands, you will be able to stand the strain and all the people will go home satisfied. So Moses listened to his father-in-law, and he did as he said. He chose capable men from Israel and made them leaders of the people, officials over thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens. They served as judges for the people at all times, and the difficult cases they brought to Moses. But the simple ones, they decided themselves.
Yeah, one of the things I love about this story is this story becomes such a beautiful picture of Moses learning that community, that it's more important to be in community, to be with one another, than it is to just go alone. That together, they are capable of much more than what Moses could ever just do by himself. And I actually see that in two ways in the story we just read. That it would be easy just to jump to the end of the story when Moses finds those other leaders and invites them to help be kind of leaders within the community. But you even see it at the very beginning, where Moses has been doing this all by himself. He's been judged. He's been listening to everybody's case. And it's not until Jethro, his father-in-law, shows up that Jethro is able to name what it doesn't look like Moses was able to see himself. That the pace that he was running, the things that he was doing by himself, was not going to work. It wasn't going to last long term. He was going to burn out. The system wasn't going to work for either him or the community. And it wasn't until he had somebody close enough that they could speak into Moses' life and help Moses see something that was there, but what he was blind to. And I think how true that is in my life, that one of the things where community's been so valuable, where one another we're with has been so helpful, is because when we invite people in, when we're humble enough to allow people to speak to us, we're able to make one another better, right? Like as iron sharpens iron, like we're able in community to be better than we would be on our own. And then there is that piece about what Jethro tells Moses to do, right? The thing that he named is that there are so many disagreements. There's so much conflict going on within the camp that Moses is serving as this judge all by himself. And there are so many people disagreeing on so many things that it is taking Moses all day. And I've got to say too, like when I first read this, like they're not that far into the desert, right? Like, I mean, they're a ways in, but it's not terribly far. And I start wondering, like, how can people be so disagreeing with one another so early into this thing? Like, wouldn't they come together around a common goal? And how is it that so many people are so disagreeing so widely? And then I turned on Facebook and realized, oh, I get it, right? Maybe we aren't too unlike them. And then the suggestion that Jethro gives Moses. The thing that Moses ends up doing is going through the camp and finding people that can share the load with him. That Moses recognizes he doesn't have to do it all by himself. Like, both he doesn't have to do it all by himself and he shouldn't do it all by himself, because it'll actually be better for him and for the community if they do this together. If Moses invites other people to come in, to share that responsibility, to share that leadership with him, that what Moses finds in this passage is that we is more important, is that we is better than me, right? That in community, together, they would be able to do far more than they would ever be able to do alone. That when he invites these to come with him, to lead with him, they will be far more effective. They will do so much more than Moses would ever just be able to do by himself.
Yeah, that's good stuff. It It reminds me of Paul's words to the church, and Paul was one of the key leaders in the early church. In fact, if you were to read the New Testament, the Bible broken up in Old Testament and New Testament, 66 total books, the majority of the New Testament, like the last third of the Bible, the majority of it was written by Paul. And Paul was an apostle that he went forth planting churches and expanding the kingdom. And Paul said something about the church. He gave this metaphor for who we are. It's a beautiful metaphor, but he called us a body, that we're the body of Christ. We are hands and feet and eyes and internal organs and knees. And not all of us are knees, but some of you are knees. Like, you are the knees of the church. You hit your knees and you have this intercessory gift to pray for people. And you have lists. Not everybody has that, but some of you do. And I think about a lady that I know that had a list of over 100 people that she had on that list, and I wanted on it, and she said I was already on it, which I think is pretty amazing. And some of us are more like the eyes, that we have this vision to see long term. Others of us we're mouthpieces, and it's rare to find Jeremy and I without words. We usually have words, we can speak, and then others of us are in that place where we're more like the hands or the feet. We're behind the scenes. We're doing the work. And whether we get recognition or not isn't the important thing. We just want to do something. And so I think about the church actually being in a place where, as Jeremy was saying, that Moses was doing this by himself. And Jethro said, it's not only not good for you, it's not good for the people of Israel. We can do much more together than we can do alone. That me doesn't compete with we, man. We is bigger and better. And so I think about the ways that we're doing that. And I want to go historical on this a bit, because sometimes we might forget how we are actually living out the cause of Christ in this world. And I want to say it this way. When we start thinking about the names of hospitals, what do you see out there all the time? It's hospitals with names like St. Jude's or Trinity Hospital or Mercy Hospital or St. Mary's Hospital. And there's a reason. The hospitals got birthed out of Christianity. People that had a need to touch people that other people weren't touching, to bring healing to people that other people weren't healing, to step in like Jesus did and went forth among those that had leprosy and was willing to touch when others were stepping back. And the creation of that, we've been removed from it for decades and decades and decades of the birth of that. But you who are nurses, you who are doctors, you who are working behind the scenes in the hospital in order to step in and to help bring healing to people, you're agents of God, and you're in a long stream of people that are actually doing the very work of the great physician. And so thanks for doing that. And I think about this, the early church, and getting historical with this, the early church would often give beyond what they had. And so if their cupboards, metaphorically, if their cupboards were just about empty, but they had something in it and somebody else was in need, they would give that to them, that they would feed the hungry. There's even stories of them feeding soldiers that were on the opposite lines, just because they had this heart for people. And I made a phone call with my wife, Kathy, traveling down the road a couple weeks ago to a good friend of mine. His name's Mac. And Mac's a truck driver. And how fitting, right? What do you think of that, Jeremy? A guy's name is Mac, who drives a Mac truck. And so, but I just called Mac and said, hey, man, I just want to thank you for feeding people, for doing that. And yeah, back in the day, they didn't have semis full of food traveling down the road. I want to thank you for being a part of the supply chain, because that's what you're doing. You're still being used by God to bring a blessing to the nation. And I love what Max said. He just said, hey, you just let them know. On my watch, we won't let you down. So I love that.
I love it. Yeah. And then so the church has been doing this in large ways and in really small ways, recognizing that together we can do way more than we ever could on our own. And I've been finding a lot of hope just in the way that I've been hearing so many of you doing that in large ways and in really small ways, right? I'm reminded of one of you who you recognized early into this. You wanted to just try to use what you have and what you enjoy in your family to be good news to people around you, your friends, your neighbors, people in your communities. And one of the things you recognized is on Sunday nights, your family normally does dinner and you like to grill. And what you found is that it wouldn't take much. You're going to make dinner Sunday night anyway. It would take much just to double what you were making. And before you sit down with your family to eat your dinner, you first made another meal just to give away. And each week you're driving that meal to another family, to another table, just to hand it just as a way of being a light in the midst of a darkness. And the difference that is making in the community. And I know another one of you, you found that in the midst of kind of the anxiety and the unknown, one of the ways you've been kind of processing that is you've been baking. Because it feels like for a number of us, you lock us in our homes long enough, and a number of us, myself included, have started asking the question of, like, how do we make bread from scratch, right? And then we realize we're making way more than we could possibly, way more than we should probably eat all on our own. And so one of you started like a porch bakery where you actually put a piece of furniture out there, and each day you're baking things and putting it on the shelves of that piece of furniture and just inviting your friends and your neighbors and your community to just come and grab something just to be good news. It's the number of phone calls I'm getting from people on our deacon team, current deacons, past deacons, and even those outside of our deacon team who have your eyes opened to the needs that are existing in our community, in our world right now, are seeing it. And then you're not just seeing it, but you're also wanting to be part of the answer. Mm-hmm. And so the phone calls I've gotten of, hey, there's a family I know, and I think we can help. What do you think? And the number of phone calls, there's a few things I enjoy more than picking up the phone and having a conversation from some of you who are doing what you can, trying to do everything we can to be light in a darkness, to be salt, to be light, to be good news in the world. Thank you for all of the ways you're doing that. It's encouraging me as I see the ways that we are making a bigger impact than any one of us, any me could.
Yeah, I love that, Jeremy. And those are my favorite stories. It's the stories of that organic, we just being the church out there. And it's not an organized thing that we've organized, but it is an organized thing that the Holy Spirit is organizing, where he's taken heart and capturing it, the hearts of our congregation, the people that belong to Fairhaven Church, and saying, and join me in being good news in so many different beautiful ways for you being the church. And I think about the phone calls that people are making and the conversations they're having with each other, where people really need someone to lean on, really need to just talk, because it's hard. And it can be really hard when you're about ready to cross what you think is the finish line, when you're at home. And I know you're home with kids, Jeremy, and I'm not. And it's a whole lot easier, I think, for many of us that are, it's just Kathy and I. And as long as I can manage my own behavior and she manages hers, everything's great, right?
Right.
But when you have a bunch of children that are missing their friends, or you become a mom that you work full time and now you're home full time and you're working and you're trying to be a teacher and you're trying to be a homemaker. And if you're a single mother that's carrying that load of, and some of our spouses, mother or father, some of our spouses are out essential working in the marketplace, and it can be hard times. And it takes its toll. So many different people that need somebody to lean into, and our church has been that. I hear stories from people that have received a phone call from people in our church, and they tell me how much that meant to them, that we have been that to each other. It reminds me of Jethro saying, hey, there's not one of you that can do this alone, but together we can.
Yeah.
Like right today, I might need somebody, or today I might be able to give to somebody, and together we can be the church. It's that ability to lean on each other.